Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm your host, Mark.
And this week, we are talking about beginnings. New beginnings, resolution, intention, and tools to actually keep those.
Yes, because I think we've all had the experience of deciding at the beginning of the year, whenever we decide that is, that by gum, this year I'm going to be doing this thing that is very important to me to do. And then within a month, it's kind of been forgotten and we feel frustrated and we disappoint ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the most pernicious things you can do to yourself as a person is to decide that you lie to yourself. You undermine your own credibility with yourself if you're not true to your word. So it's important when you make a solemn vow that you're going to make a change, that you have the tools available in order to really make a good run at it.
Yeah, to understand how human psychology works mm-hmm. for that. Mm-hmm.
So, beginnings.
Yeah, let's actually talk about beginning. When is the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I wrote a blog post about this today. You know, one of the things that is kind of funny about the pagan community is that there is somewhat heated debate about when the year actually starts and ends. For some people, it's at Hallows, at Samhain. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, death happens and immediately after there's rebirth and that's the whole course of the year. For other people like me, I consider the birth place to be Yule, where mm-hmm. the sun starts coming back and the light is reborn, right? So that leaves this eighth of the year, this octile of the year, that is the fallow time, the time of decomposition and recomposition. And we talked about that recently in our episode about death. Mm-hmm. So that's my vote. But then there are also people who are just like, you know, to hell with it. Let's just use the calendar. January 1st is fine. It's as good a starting point as any. And we'll just move from there. So there are very different opinions about when things yep. start and when things end. What's your perspective on that, Yucca?
Well, you know, a couple of things here. First, the metaphor of using birth. I'm going to say, as someone who has given birth multiple times, it's not just a single moment. That's a long process. And you might be lucky that you had a short one, but birth is not a moment. It really, really is a process. But I don't really see the year as having a start and a finish. The calendar does. Great. That makes sense. So we have so that's what I do. I say, okay, so it's going to be, we're right at the end of 2020. It's going to be 2021. And okay, wonderful. I don't bother staying up till midnight. I did that. I think maybe the last time I did that was the turn of the century. other than that, I just go to sleep. But the year simply continues. There's not a point in Earth's orbit when it starts over. It just continues. And it's the same pattern, but it's never actually in the same place.
Right.
Ever. No matter what your frame of reference is, it never comes back to the same place. But there is the continuation that we can rely on, generally, of the continual seasons. And eventually, over millions of years, yes, that shifts, but not within our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly not in our time scale. So yes, well, and I agree with that. I mean, obviously the natural world just carries on. Calendaring is a system that we use in order to track the passage of time and not have it all blend into itself. Mm-hmm. Some of that is naturally programmed by the fact that we're diurnal animals and, you know, we have sunrise in the morning and sunset in the evening, and that demarks days, mm-hmm. which actually have a physical reality. But weeks, months, years, that's all made up.
Yeah. Well, months, I mean, we have the our reproductive cycle and the lunar cycle, which line up very nicely. So, but our 30 days or 31 days, that's an approximation of what's going on with the lunar cycle, which is predictable. And then the reproductive cycle has some, you know, flex in there.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are certainly logical rationales for why our calendar is as it is, although not so much for why certain days fall on certain calendar days. Like, why is the big winter solstice festival here on the 25th of December when actually the 20th is when the solstice is happening? But that has to do with the transition from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar, and it's just a lot of silly human tricks.
Mm-hmm.
One other note too,
before we go further with what's happening with the natural world, when we talk about the death of a year or the birth of a year, if we look in the ecosystems, there isn't a clear start and stop with death and life. Mm-hmm. So an individual dies, or it's kind of fuzzy when they actually come into being or not. You know, when do you start counting them? Is it when in their mother's cell, or, you know, all of that? But the life and the death overlap with each other.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. The only real death in an ecosystem is extinction. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, they aren't nearly as rare as we would like for them to be, but fortunately those are quite rare relative to the deaths of individuals.
Yeah.
So yes, I mean, acknowledging to start with that declaring a beginning is at some level an arbitrary act, there are real values in it for us as humans. We tend to operate in chapters. We think about eras of our lives. We think about, and we can define those in a lot of different ways. The time when my kids were really young, the time when I was in college.
You lived in certain places. If you move somewhere, then that can be a completely new chapter.
Right, exactly. And so having that understanding of our lives in chapters, sometimes it becomes useful to declare a new one and say, okay, that one's over and we're going to do something different now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that is where a lot of innovation and human growth comes from. So that brings us to the subject of New Year's resolutions, right? Mm-hmm. This is a tradition, certainly in the Americas. I think in the English-speaking world, I'm not sure how predominant it is outside of the Anglophonic world.
I'm not either. I don't know.
Hmm. But there are lots of New Year traditions, you know, toasts and wishes for better things going forward. And certainly, you know, I don't know if anybody's thought of this, but if I owned a party store, I would be selling pinatas marked 2020 for New Year's Eve this year, so people could just beat the hell out of it and be done.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of those kind of resolutions is, of course, to improve ourselves. And that's always a positive aspiration, right? You know, that mm-hmm. people want to be better people. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But the tricky part in our concept of New Year's resolutions is that they have this tremendous fragility. They're like soap bubbles. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to stop eating sugar for And this is the other thing. They tend to be declarations of I'm going to do something forever.
Yeah.
Or for the whole year, right? I'm going to stop eating sugar for the whole year. And then, of course, you know, long about the end of January, you just can't help it and you have some sugar. And then the resolution is blown, right? Oh, it's over.
And you're a failure.
I'm a failure and I lied to myself and all that kind of stuff. None of which is good for you psychologically. And isn't very reflective about how successful new initiatives work. Successful new initiatives involve a lot of failure.
Mm-hmm.
You get an idea and you move towards that goal. And you fail, and you fail, and you fail, and you succeed, and then you fail again, but then you succeed two more times. And if you're persistent and, you know, continue to have support for yourself in pursuing that goal, then you actually get somewhere and you've made a change. So the concept of the fragile New Year's resolution is not one that I subscribe to. I don't think it's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And building on that, we can think of examples in our life where the big things that we have learned and accomplished as just as animals, think about learning to speak, whether it was learning to speak your mother tongue or later on you learned another language. You made a lot of mistakes. And if we set it up in such a way that, or learning to walk or riding your bike or any of those kind of childhood things that we talk about, if we set that up that if you don't succeed the first time, if you fail, then we would have a world where people couldn't communicate or walk or do any of those things because that's part of the learning.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, with pretty much any skill, learning how to do it wrong is an essential part of learning how to do it right because you need to understand the difference.
Yeah. And you set, if you're the one taking care of someone who's learning to speak or learning to walk, you prepare for that ahead of time. You don't put a bunch of things that are really easy to trip on in front of your 11-month-old, right? You mm-hmm. move that out of the way. We have a whole process and a whole industry around it too of baby-proofing, right? Mm-hmm. But you set up an environment in which that's going to help the person to achieve whatever they're trying to work on. And right. So sometimes we need to be our own parents in that way when we're working on something like a resolution or a big goal like that. If you're cutting out sugar, set yourself up for success and get it out of your house.
Yes.
Right. There's some really practical, maybe make that part of the ritual that you're doing around it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. burn that or throw it out or give it away if you don't want to waste food or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But and I think that this comes down to a lot of what we're saying here. Do it with deliberation. You know, do it with some intention and some consciousness around, you know, how do I set myself up for success here? Mm-hmm. Because learning how to succeed at something that's challenging is a human skill that a lot of people really don't have. For a lot of people, if they're not good at something right away, then they quit. They just don't do it anymore.
Yeah. And it's understandable on some levels because we aren't in a very supportive culture around that.
That's right.
And we are in a very competitive culture. And sometimes the attitude is it's better to not try than to fail.
Sure. Because being
don't let anyone see that you failed. Don't let them see.
Because being a loser is such a gigantic thing in our society. It's ridiculous. I mean, life isn't something you win. We all end up in the same place.
Yes.
Which is dead. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what's the quality of your ride? And how do you comport yourself? And what's your impact on the world? during the course of that span. It's not about, you know, accumulating toys or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Which could take us off into a nice long tangent about capitalism, but let's not do that today.
No. Let's come back to resolutions though. So New Year's resolutions aren't really something that I do, but I do a intention setting is really important in my life. So I can really see the value of doing resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this, whenever the New Year's is for you, and I think, you know, if you are doing it with the calendar year, there's a lot of other people doing it at the same time as you. And there's something kind of special about that.
Yes.
Camaraderie, that communal part of it. And so I would really invite people, if that is something you're doing, to really be very mindful about how you set that up. And, you know, not just make it a thing that you go, oh, and come up with some really difficult thing and then feel guilty when it doesn't work. So I think that's one of the things we want to, well, is there anything else we want to talk about in general before we get into tools that people can use, Mark?
Well, this sort of straddles both sides of that question. I don't really subscribe to the New Year's resolution either. But what I do is I choose a word or a short phrase as a theme for the year. And then under that theme, I will set a couple of goals, specific goals that I'm seeking to achieve. So last year, for example, my theme was thrive, because for a long time, myself and my partner had really been living very hand to mouth, with no cushion and just, you know, really in a very, very challenging, hard scrabble kind of way of surviving. I'm very happy with my work. I love the work that I do, which is a great, you know, benefit to me. I know many people don't. But still just getting by was a real challenge. And I was able to make some advances that eased things up for us somewhat and put us in a, you know, accumulated some savings and, you know, managed to do some things that helped take that terrible survival anxiety off us a little bit. So that was, I feel like I had a successful year with the theme thrive. Next year, the theme that I have chosen is grow. And there's a couple of different ways that I want to do that. But once again, it's a very aspirational kind of theme where, you know, even at my age, and I'm about to enter my 60th year at my 59th birthday on January 3rd, even at my age, I believe I am able to grow. I am able to make changes and improve my level of interaction, of kindness, of discourse, of effectiveness, of leadership, all those kinds of things. So that's my reinterpretation of the New Year's resolution practice.
I like that. So it's a theme that you're looking at. It's something you can work towards. You can think about it, but it's not like it's a thing that you fail or succeed at, or that you can break.
Right. I mean, I do set a couple of specific goals underneath that. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're very tangible things, like, you know, only drink on weekends, or I don't know. I'm just making stuff up out of the air, but so they're measurable. As we say in the nonprofit program development biz, you know, they have quantifiable metrics where you can document your progress, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very difficult to know whether you're succeeding at something or not if you can't count it.
Yeah.
You know, if your goal is do something better.
Yeah, what is
Yeah.
What's better? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to know what you mean by better when you decide you're going to do that.
Sure. And well, and there's so many different personality types. I'm a list person. I like to make my little lists, and it feels so good to cross them off and then see my nice filled out list. My partner, that is a recipe for anxiety.
Hmm.
Because every time he looks at that list, it's a big list of all the things that he hasn't done, that he's failing at, that he's never going to get to it. So for some people, that the way that you construct it, the way that you set it up, it's got to work for your personality.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you on the lists. I really love my digital tools. And I manage my calendar through, online and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to my task list, I want it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I print it out for work at the beginning of the week, and I parse out the things that I need to do in each work day.
Mm-hmm.
With my meetings listed above the tasks, so I know when I'm going to have to be out of my office doing something else. And that satisfaction of running a pen through something that is done, it really means a lot to me.
Yep.
Was it you who told me that when you make a list, the first thing that you put on the list is make a list so you can cross it out?
No, but that's adorable.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful. I mean, that almost reminds me like Frog and Toad might have done that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. That's great. Then you've got something that's wonderful because you get that, it gets you going, right? It gets that momentum.
I'm already on my way. I've done the first thing. I made a list.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I do lists for seasons. Ah. I do a lot of lists in general, but I really do sit down for seasons at a time. And for me, there's 8 seasons
right
in a year. And so, because there's first spring and second spring, I'm in a temperate environment where we really do have those extremely different seasons throughout the year. And that it lives in a little notebook that I have, and I go back to it, and it's got the special pen for it. But then there's lists every day. But I guess a year just feels too long for me sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've got longer term goals. What do we want to do in the 5-year term? What do we want to do in the season of our life? But each year is just seems like too much of a bite. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that. One of the tools that I wanted to discuss as we go into, tools for how we make this work, mm-hmm. is to fold it into your practice and revisit the theme and the goals at each Sabbath.
Mm.
So, the beginning of February rolls around and it's Imbolc or Bridget or whatever you call it. I have my own name for it. Because for me, it's the rain holiday. That's the time when everything's pouring down rain. So, pull it out at that time and, how am I doing? Did I remember these? What were they? And what's great about that is that it gives you an opportunity for a new start 8 times in the course of the year.
Yeah.
You can always say, oh yeah, I was going to do that, wasn't I? I really ought to double down on that in the next 6-8 weeks so that I can achieve this by the end of the year as I planned.
And I think that each time of the year does have something that ties in with beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
You can really see the beginning in each of those, going back to the true beginning of a cycle.
Right.
You can really start anywhere in it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, one of the ways that I interpret the Wheel of the Year, and we've talked about this before, is in terms of those chapters of human living, right? Mm-hmm. And so, declaration, I'm now a young adult. Well, that's a beginning. Now I'm a fully grown, active, prime of my life adult. That's another new beginning. I think there's always an opportunity to do something new as long as you're alive. there's a chance to do something new. So really encourage people to take advantage of the option. And decide what's really important to you that may be not as present or missing in your life right now, or something that is present that you really just wish was not, and start to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's what you can do. You can work on you.
And even if what you're most interested in is outside of yourself, what you can do is mobilize yourself in its cause, right? So let's say I decided, okay, I'm going to get a lot more involved with activism this year, and I'm going to join my local ACT Blue chapter, and we're going to write postcards to voters in swing states, and you know, that I'm going to do that every month. You know, that's a tangible goal, but towards a larger cause in the society, but it's still just trying to change myself in terms of my own behavior.
Yeah.
So what are some other tools that we could use to help us as we pursue these, whatever you want to call them, intentions, resolutions?
Yeah, well, I think there's some different levels of types of intentions. I think there's some that are really, really big. You've got some really big life changes, which, depending on the person, what might be really big for me could be completely insignificant for you, or vice versa. But there's different amounts of attention, I think, that each of those things would take up. And when it comes to the smaller daily ones, I think that one approach is to incorporate into your daily practice a component which is touching in with your intentions. So maybe intention for the day, but are there some ongoing intentions that you just want to touch bases with? So I've shared with all of you before what I'm doing currently is every morning I'll go outside with the children and we greet the sun and say hello to the sun and very cute in all its toddlerhoodness, and have a moment of gratitude. So we state what we're grateful for, and then we also state our intentions. And there's intentions of each day, but there's the patterns of intentions as well. And so that would be a wonderful time to bring in an overall intention. So I'll share with all of you some of my intention that I've been working on recently is being healthier with screens, is really spending less time continuously picking up and touching that phone and being more just present in the moment. And so each day when I say those intentions out loud, there's a reinforcement there. And it's enough so that my cute little four-year-old actually teases me about it. If I forget to say one of those things, she goes, "Mom, aren't you going to be present today?" but that would look totally different for different people. But that's, you know, that's an example of one thing that I do. So I think that building it into your daily schedule, and it could be when you're drinking your coffee or in the shower is a wonderful time, stepping in or out of the shower, those sorts of things. Mark, you've spoken a little bit before about lighting candles with your focus each day.
Yes. When it comes to intentions, what I find works very well for me is writing them down. There's something that concretizes the reality of it by actually putting it in print and having it exist in a physical form. And that doesn't work on the computer.
Yeah.
Characters on a computer screen are too ephemeral. They're too easy to erase. But once you've written something down on a piece of paper, it's there until the paper is destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that writing my intentions down and then revisiting that and, you know, writing any notes about what my experience is being around that or what challenges I'm having around it or what I've discovered in the course of pursuing it, all of that I think is very helpful in terms of attaining those aspirations.
Mm. I could imagine someone writing and placing that in some place which is like a mirror or a focus or something mm-hmm. like that, that's revisited on a daily basis.
I find it's helpful to have a special book. Mm-hmm. And I have a book. It's the book itself is just a blank journal book, but it has a leather cover, very mm-hmm. beautiful leather cover. And so in there is where I can write my various ruminations about goals and aspirations. And
do you have your special pens that you found work really nicely with your handwriting? And
yeah, but I use those everywhere. I use them at work. I really hate using a pen that isn't a rollerball ink pen.
Okay.
Fine point rollerball pen is the pen for me. My only variation is, do I use black or blue ink?
Wonderful. Yeah. So those would be sort of the daily kind. Do you have any other thoughts on daily before we move into the more, the bigger ones?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, every day, when I get up, I stand in front of my focus and I draw a tarot card, which is sort of a lens or a theme for the day. And I state my intention for what the day is going to be like. And because, of course, you know, this is psychological brain hacking. It's not magic. Sometimes the day doesn't cooperate. And the day isn't like that at all.
Yeah.
But I can make a valiant effort to try to make it that way, and to try to be the kind of person that can have the kind of day that I intended. And that I think is all that can be asked of anyone.
Mm. Yeah, that's important.
So now let's talk about the bigger, kind of longer term aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the first thing that I would recommend is the same thing is true in kind of in affirmation, saying things to yourself in order to self-program so that you come to believe the statements. You always want them to be affirmative statements.
Mm.
You don't want to use the word no or not or don't or any of those in the phrase that you are setting as your intention, because your brain will just edit it.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain will just say, oh, well, okay, cancel out the no or, you know. So instead of I will not be foolish, you know, tell yourself I will be wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Aspire to that and own it, that you have a wisdom and that you can cultivate that and have more of it. And
because whatever you are focusing on is what you're giving power in your life to.
Yes.
So if you're focusing on the foolishness, you are giving power to that versus
right.
giving power to the wisdom or the careful thought or whatever, the mindfulness, whatever it is that you're looking for.
One of the most pernicious of these goals that is a real sickness in our society is around weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will say, I'm going to lose 30 pounds, whatever it is. No, don't do that. Say, I'm going to be healthier.
Yeah. Look at, recognize that the weight is a symptom of something else that's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you're able to stay focused on the health aspect of it, odds are good, if you are overweight, the odds are good that your weight will drop as you do the things to be more healthy.
Yeah.
But it's about the health. It's not about the weight. There's nothing wrong with being heavy inherently. It doesn't make you a failure of a person or a bad person or ugly or any of that stuff. That's just societal nonsense. It's not true.
Yeah.
If for health reasons you want to lose some weight, then go for the health.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, though, I want to, this isn't exactly what you were saying, Mark, but this is something related. It's okay to want to be attractive. It's okay to want to feel good about your body. Because on the other side of all of this, there's this guilt about, oh, you shouldn't want to feel good about yourself. You shouldn't want to be attractive. You know, that's all superficial and bad. It's okay. It's okay.
That all sounds very, very Calvinistic to me.
Yeah. And that's really very, it's there. We're getting these very conflicted messages of your value is about your appearance. But you shouldn't care. Don't get caught caring about it.
Right. Because that's vanity, right?
That's vanity. Yeah.
But
I think I really think if we're more gentle with ourselves about it and just don't beat ourselves up so much. That
it's okay to want what you want.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, even if it's not good for you, it's okay for you to want what you want. The question is, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
If you know that it's not good for you, then the wise part of you can say, yeah, I want that, but I'm not going to have it right now. I'm just not going to do that right now. I was a smoker for a long time, up into my 20s. And it's an incredibly difficult addiction to beat. It's just very, very difficult. And at that time, a lot more people smoked. So it was around me all the time, right? And it's kind of a funny story about how I finally quit smoking. I moved to Spain. And
that wouldn't have been a very easy place to quit.
Well,
and
it was so bad everywhere.
It's gotten a lot better.
I know Europe has really denicotinized a great deal, but it was so bad in the late 80s. I would go to nightclubs and you couldn't see the far wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized this is going to kill me if I don't stop it right now. So I made a little chart with graph paper with a little box for each week, made a kind of thermometer, and hung it in my room in my pension where I lived in the first place that I would see when I opened the door every time I came home. So I would, and the last thing that I would do before turning the light off at night would be to put an X in the box of that day in that week. So I slowly accumulated week after week after week of not smoking. You know, the X in the box meant that I hadn't smoked that day. And finally, there was so much of it that I couldn't let go of it. It would have cost me too much psychologically to have done all that and then smoked.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit. And that was it.
Mm.
But what I was telling myself at the time was, I'm a non-smoker.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you incorporated a habit, like a check-in with yourself and accountability that you had. There was the aspect of actually filling something physical out that you could look at over and over again. So it seems like you were incorporating a lot of ritual tools into this practice this that you were working on?
Yes. I mean, I was already a pagan then, and I already had some sense of what ritual was about and how it could be used beneficially. And so I designed something which would necessarily corral my consciousness, my psychology, into moving in the direction that was healthier. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what people can do for their various New Year's intentions or resolutions. Mm-hmm. It's not fair to yourself to just hang this big old goal out there and say, well, I'm going to do that now, and then forget about it.
Yeah.
You disappoint yourself, and disappointing yourself is a big deal. People don't really think it is, but when you're a disappointment to yourself, that is a serious blow to your self-esteem and to your sense of yourself in the world. So you don't want to do mm-hmm. it. It's not good for you.
Yeah. So let's think about some, maybe just some brainstorming of types of things that people could incorporate. I mean, the what everybody's working on is going to be so different, but types of rituals or symbols that or little tools that could be used. As you mentioned, the chart. Mm-hmm. Charts are great for some people, not good for other people. Some people might have the trauma from the star sticker charts and and that sort of thing.
But you could do it with a jar and a bunch of beans.
Yeah, a jar and a bunch of beans, or but we could also talk about things like wearing a particular piece of jewelry mm-hmm. that every time you pick up and put on that jewelry, you're picking up and putting on that intention that yes. you're carrying with you through the day. Or when you're first doing a ritual around setting that intention, maybe bring a smell with you.
Mm-hmm.
That smell is, and even better if it's a smell that you're going to encounter on a regular basis, so that you associate that smell with the intention, with your resolution that you're working on.
Yes. Yes. Great idea. Because all of this stuff is associative, right? I mean, what you want is to be, first of all, reminded of the commitment that you made, because it's easy to forget stuff like that and just move on. Mm-hmm. So you want to be reminded of it on a regular basis. And then you also want to have an experience of making progress. So, I mean, for some people, just kind of posting the word, like in my case, grow, somewhere where I see it
mm-hmm.
throughout the course of the day, can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Words can be magical.
Yeah.
And in other cases, it can be more symbolic things, like, I don't know, if you're trying to improve your management of something or your maintenance of something, maybe get a plant and mm-hmm. have the plant be symbolic of that, so that, you know, you take care of the plant and the plant is healthy, and then, you know, and you're also doing this other thing in your life that's also getting healthier.
Mm, yeah. Now, there's something I want to pull back from the beginning when we were talking about the mistakes, because we are humans and we make mistakes, mm-hmm. whether that's falling over when you're learning to walk or slipping up and eating the sugar. You don't even think about it. You put the M&Ms in your mouth as you're passing by the bowl or whatever. That when we're thinking about making this change, thinking about what could go wrong and how am I going to respond when it does? How do I get myself, how do I return myself back? How do I get back up on that wagon, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's, in most cases, it's going to happen.
Sure, sure. And the trick is not to give up then.
Yeah.
Because that's the easiest thing, honestly. I mean, that's, I don't like to use words like this very much, but it's really the laziest response to having a failure when you're trying something hard. The best response is to have a combination of accountability and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, yes, I failed. That I very definitely did not meet the standard that I wanted to meet. So I'm going to be clear about that. I'm not going to make excuses about it. That's what really happened. That said, I am trying. I'm working really hard at this. And if I had a momentary oversight, well, that's what it was. And I'm going to keep trying to do this because it's important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. So how are you feeling about this conversation, Mark?
I think we have mined it about as far as it can be mined, honestly. I know that there's more to say. I mean, there are so many different ritual techniques that can be used. I mean, you could have a candle that you light every day that is specifically about that thing that you do. You could tell the candle what you have achieved that day in the furtherance of your goal.
Mm-hmm.
Which gives you a little accountability moment because you know that it's coming up at the end of the day and it'll give you more reason to move in that direction during the course of your day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure that I could think of probably a dozen different ways that people could incorporate ritual practices into their goals and resolutions. But yeah. I think the most important thing is, as with all ritual, be creative and understand what really means something to you. You know, if it's a particular piece of music that you love and you love to dance to, you know, put that on and think about what you're achieving. You know, give yourself the reward of the dance for having made a positive step in that direction.
Yeah.
So in all of your beginnings, I wish you the very best of luck and good fortune and perseverance, which I know can be very, very difficult in our short attention span culture, but it's the only thing that really leads to substantive change in us, and substantive change is possible. So, be of good cheer and optimistic and move forward towards that.
And Happy New Year's.
And Happy New Year, whenever you celebrate it.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Yucca. It's been a pleasure.